fifth case of the day, the United States versus Santiago. Ms. Murphy.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My name is Erin Murphy, and I represent Adalberto Santiago, the defendant in this case. Mr. Santiago's trial suffered from two prejudicial errors. First, the government repeatedly relied upon highly prejudicial gang evidence in an effort to prove a conspiracy between Mr. Santiago and his co-defendant, even though the government identified no direct link between the gang evidence and the conspiracy that it sought to prove. For that reason, the gang evidence was substantially more prejudicial than probative, and the government's erroneous reliance on it entitles Mr. Santiago to a new trial. Second, the government failed to provide sufficient evidence from which the jury could have determined beyond a reasonable doubt that the destroyed substance that had been recovered from the transaction was crack cocaine rather than some other form of cocaine base. The government's evidence on that point was nearly identical to the evidence that it had provided at the sentence hearing for Mr. Santiago's co-defendant, and this Court has already found that that evidence was only minimally sufficient to satisfy the preponderance of the evidence standard that applied there. The same evidence was not sufficient to satisfy a reasonable doubt standard, and for that reason we would ask the Court to at the very least remand for resentencing without the jury's finding. Turning first to the gang evidence issue, although the Court has recognized that gang evidence can be admissible in cases involving conspiracy or joint venture charges, the Court has also made very clear that evidence about gangs is not always admissible just because the government is trying to prove a conspiracy or a joint venture. And I think the distinction is drawn very aptly in the Court's decision in United States versus Irvin, and comparing that to some of the cases that the government cites in its brief. The government points to a number of cases where gang evidence did come in because the government was trying to prove a broad-ranging drug trafficking conspiracy that was actually facilitated by a gang. Indeed, many of those cases involve a continuing criminal enterprise charge. There's all sorts of gang activity involved, and that gang activity is central to what the government's trying to prove. In Irvin, by contrast, we have two co-defendants alleged to have been involved in one isolated occasion of drug activity, and no evidence at all linking the gang to the charges against those individuals.
But, Ms. Murphy, what about isn't there evidence in the record, in a recording, when this agent Gomez is with the CI and they're talking with Padilla, and Padilla says something? Doesn't Padilla say something that links this to the gang?
All he says is, you know, hey, we're all Cobra folk here. We're all part of the same gang. So you know, let's do this deal.
So it gives some aura of legitimacy to their dealings because it's sort of it's part of the Cobra code or something.
It has to do with all he's saying is, hey, we can trust each other because we're fellow gang members. He's not saying, hey,
and that comes from Padilla, right?
But he's not saying, hey, here, you know, the gang is behind us here. This is the gang's drug transaction. You know, you can trust the gang. You got your evidence from the gang. And a case I would point you to a case, United States versus Harris, that we cited in our brief. That's a case where the defendant did discuss gangs explicitly in his own confession, and the district court still concluded that it wasn't appropriate for his confession to come in, and that the better course of action was to limit the way that the government could elicit that evidence by having a government witness testify about the substance of the confession while not saying that the defendant was a member of the gang. It would have been very easy to have the same kind of accommodation here.
I guess the trouble I'm having with your argument, I appreciate there was a lot of gang evidence here from agents about what the course of why they were doing an investigation at all and so on. But at the heart of the deal here, one of the people involved in the deal is bringing in sort of the imprimatur of the Cobras, and that seems to be right at the heart of the transaction.
I would disagree that it's really at the heart of the transaction. I mean, you have a 90-minute video here with lots of things going on. There is one reference in the middle of that 90-minute video to Cobra folk. All sorts of portions of the video were excluded. This easily is part that could have been included. It wasn't somehow necessary. I mean, there really wasn't even any debate here as to whether there was a conspiracy. It was an identification case.
Are you saying that Padilla's reference to Cobra should have been redacted as well?
Yes, I think that that portion of the video did not need to come in here.
Was that portion objected to?
Well, the objections on the record to the video came after the district court had already rejected our motion in limine to exclude gang evidence. So at that point, I think it was clear that that us saying we didn't think this piece of gang evidence should come in, that argument had already been rejected. And I presumably.
Sorry for interrupting.
I don't think we would have been agreeing to allow that evidence to come in if the court had come out a different way on the gang issue. But I do think that it's important to look at Irvin and the fact that the court did draw a line, and a line that I think makes a lot of sense. You have cases where the gang is at the heart of the conspiracy, and this just isn't that kind of case. This is a case where the government basically concedes in its response brief that it thought this evidence should come in just to show that these individuals knew each other and had a relationship as gang members. And what the court said in Irvin is, under those circumstances, gang evidence is at best only minimally probative of any conspiratorial relationship, and that at that point, the highly prejudicial nature of gang evidence and the fact that it does raise connotations of guilt by association in jurors' minds is enough under the 403 analysis to make that evidence excludable. We also don't think the government has met their burden here proving that this error was harmless. We have tangible evidence in this case that it really did have a very prejudicial effect on the jury, because a juror came forward after the first day of the trial and said, I'm scared. I'm scared for my life. I'm scared for the safety of my children if I continue to serve on this jury. I think, and I'm not saying that the district court mishandled the actual occurrence of that juror coming forward. We think he correctly dismissed the juror from the jury. But at that point, we did renew our objection to gang evidence, and at that point I think it was very clear not only that the gang evidence was at best minimally probative of any issue in the case, but also that it was having a more prejudicial effect on the jury and was essentially denying Mr. Santiago his right to an impartial jury. If there's no questions, I'll just, before I sit down, briefly mention the crack cocaine issue. The government's evidence on crack cocaine was nearly identical to the evidence in Padilla. They really didn't submit any evidence that distinguished crack from cocaine base, and the court has said in Padilla that that is part of the government's burden in light of this court's current jurisprudence on the crack versus cocaine base issue. So if that evidence barely satisfy the preponderance of the evidence standard, I don't see it how it could have satisfied a reasonable doubt standard in this case.
But the jury finding on the type of cocaine base it was wasn't required, was it?
It was required for the government to seek a heightened sentence in this case. Ultimately, there was not actually an Apprendi error in this case, because the sentence was within the same range that it would have been if that hadn't applied.
So the jury finding is superfluous here, isn't it?
It would have been if the district court had made its own finding. The district court didn't. It relied on the jury's finding as implicating a mandatory minimum, and it plainly considered that it had no discretion to go below the 20-year sentence that Mr. Santiago received, because the jury finding made that mandatory minimum applicable, and that mandatory minimum would not have applied without the jury's finding or some finding by the district court, which we don't have here. The district court didn't
Judge
make a finding.
Hadn't Judge Duryagian found that very same substance to be crack in Padilla's sentencing?
He had, but I think it's pretty well recognized that, while certainly that gives some indication of how he would view this evidence on remand, you need a finding for the sentence to be based on, and there isn't a finding here if the jury's finding was insufficient. So it does need to go back to Judge Duryagian to look at the evidence here, which is slightly different. We have some problems with the evidence that came in from the government's witness, expert witness. The expert witness did not actually testify at Padilla's sentencing hearing. She did testify here, and she provided testimony that seemed to suggest the government didn't think it needed to show a real difference here between crack and cocaine base, because she basically testified that crack is just a street name for cocaine base and suggested it's all one and the same. Well,
and I don't want to take all your time, but Gomez, who dealt with crack quite a bit in his work, said it was crack.
He did, but what the court pointed out in the Padilla case is Gomez, the government got no testimony from Gomez that he had any familiarity with distinguishing crack from other forms of cocaine base, as opposed to distinguishing crack from powder cocaine, and that's evident here with his testimony on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy. Mr. Salib.
May it please the Court. My name is Peter Salib, and I represent the United States. The lower court did not err when it admitted limited gang evidence because Padilla's statement, "That's Cobra Folk," made the evidence relevant to show there was, in fact, a relationship between Padilla and Santiago.
So you don't think it was overdone at all?
John, I don't think it was overdone in this case. There was a motion in limine specifically limiting this evidence, and it was not overdone because it was only brought in to explain that term and the other term, why would you burn Cobra Folk in relation to moving the deal.
But didn't the government ask all of the government agents testifying what their assignment was, and then the agents went on to say, we were working on this big Spanish Cobra investigation?
Those questions were asked, Your Honor. And
I don't see what that's got to do with this transaction.
The agents that were asked, aside from Agent Gomez, I'll leave for a moment, Officer Parks and Officer Rosario, it was only for their assignment. Nothing else was elicited about the gangs or anything regarding their three-year investigation. It was just, what was your assignment? We were investigating this gang.
My problem with that is that implies that's why they went after this guy on trial.
Well, the evidence was, the focus was on the Spanish Cobras from Agent Gomez, that they were investigating Mr. Padilla initially. And then Mr. Santiago came in as the facilitator who actually brought the drugs. But those questions and that evidence pales in comparison to the substance of this case, which was the recordings, the videotapes, the phone calls, the conversations between Padilla, the confidential informant, and Agent Gomez, and the fact of how all this evidence came into trial and the direct evidence that came in that did not focus on the gang. But this was an identification case, and most of the evidence went strictly to identification and to support Agent Gomez's identification based on the testimony that was presented from the investigation on the scene. As I said, with the phone calls, video, vehicle records, phone records, audio recordings, there was a plethora of other evidence that was, frankly, the focus of this case.
Now, we have a case, an opinion that's coming out, I believe, today, maybe tomorrow. I think it's today. And Agent Gomez is involved in that case, as he has been in a number of cases that we've decided in the last 18 months, at least three recorded published opinions. And in each one of these cases, there is a problem. The recording device doesn't kick in and record the conversation at a critical time. Here you have a one-shot cocaine deal, and 2 years later, the charge, and the cocaine just happens to be destroyed. Maybe I'm wrong to say, is there some kind of a pattern here with this agent and his cases?
God, I don't believe there's a pattern, and the issue of the destruction of the narcotics was actually a fault of the Cook County Sheriff in this case.
It's Gomez's case.
It is Gomez's case, Your Honor, and it just happens that's the way the chips fell.
Loratio or something in these sting operations.
There's no evidence in this record that there is any pattern of conduct, and it was obviously not raised by anyone, so I don't believe it necessarily goes to the merits of this case before this court today. As I said, the investigation went how it went. Mistakes are made with the destruction of narcotics. All the video evidence and recordings in this case worked. So, as I said, that was the majority of the case, which went to minimize the effect of this gang evidence, even though it was probative of the relationship and a conspiracy that we had to prove. As the court noted, in Irvin, there was no conspiracy charge there. And this evidence was probative of that conspiracy to support the identification. Touching on and frankly, Your Honors, if there was any prejudice at all in this case, there would have been harmless error here because, as I stated, the overwhelming evidence that was introduced and which the 3 days of this trial was the vast majority of the trial. And in addition to the instruction by the court and by the closing argument of the prosecutor, who specifically admonished the jury, do not convict Mr. Santiago because he's a gang member. That didn't happen in Irvin. The prosecutor closed on the gang in Irvin, and that further distinguishes this case. I'll turn now briefly to the drug type and quantity. There was sufficient evidence at trial for the jury to conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that this substance was, in fact, crack cocaine, and not just cocaine base. The factors listed by this court in Bryant support that, that the test, there was positive tests for cocaine base, the description of the color, shape and texture, packaging, price, and the fact that the seller represented that this was, in fact, crack cocaine. That was from Mr. Padilla himself, that this was cooked fresh off the land. That also supported Agent Gomez's experience in dealing with crack cocaine, and that all of these, all of his prior transactions dealt with crack cocaine, and this, in fact, was crack cocaine. And as the court elicited that, even if it wasn't to that point with the jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, Judge Duryagin would have found by preponderance of the evidence, because there was more testimony elicited at trial, which he presided over, that he could have found by preponderance of the evidence. And for all those reasons, Your Honors, we would ask this court to affirm the conviction and sentence. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Ms. Murphy? You have a little time left.
Not sure about that.
Pardon?
I'm not sure about that, but I'll be very brief. The one point I'd like to just make very clear, Irvin was not a case where a conspiracy was charged, but it really is a case about the admissibility of gang evidence in conspiracy cases. The court said very clearly the government didn't have to prove a joint venture, but it was legitimate that the government tried to, and the case before the court was whether gang evidence was probative of that joint venture. So Irvin is directly on point and applicable here, and it's completely irrelevant that it's not a conspiracy case. I would also just briefly note on the point of the government's closing argument. Although the government did say in its closing argument, don't convict Mr. Santiago just because he's a gang member, it then immediately stated after that, but it's okay to consider that he was probably in a conspiracy with Mr. Padilla because they're members of the same gang. And that's what the court said in Irvin really isn't okay. It's at best minimally probative. The evidence should not have even come in for that purpose. And it really was not appropriate for the government in closing argument to be encouraging the jury to make its decision based on that evidence. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. Ms. Murphy, you have an additional thanks together with Mr. Buchholz for accepting the appointment and ably representing Mr. Santiago before this court.